This is a Hot Pie original.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the DMP CD Sports Podcast. I'm Chad Fisher alongside my co-host, Tony Farmer. Tony, what's up, brother?
Dude, I'm having a great day today. I am so stoked to be talking to Ken Rutgers, Packers Hall of Famer, really good NFL career. And today he's involved in a whole bunch of activism related to his wife and other people who have been injured by vaccines. And so this is going to be a dynamic conversation.
Oh, yeah. So different.
Really, unlike a lot of the episodes that we've had so far. And I'm stoked about it, man.
Yeah. What's so awesome about this show and our job, man, is that we get to interview these guys that we grew up watching playing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember watching this guy play on some of those Favre teams and everything like that. Some of those fantastic teams from the 90s. He was an awesome player. And so now to get to talk to him, get some insider information about what was going on in the huddle and all that stuff and behind closed doors, what Brett Favre was like, is going to be awesome, man. I'm super excited. I've been excited about this since we found out he was coming on the show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Before we get to that, though, Chad, can you tell folks out there about one of our favorite sponsors?
Yeah, definitely. Oddshark. Oddshark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, the hottest sports news, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark has that too, and it's free.
Absolutely free, folks.
Yes. In-depth expert analysis, odds, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. They've got decades of stats in their databases, and their insiders give you takes so hot they sizzle. That's hot. They're your one-stop shot. It just starts getting sexier and sexier.
Every time.
By like the 15th episode, I'm going to be showing nipples and stuff. You know what I'm saying? But so hot they sizzle. They're your one-stop shop for all your odds info on sports and pop culture events. Want to get a better understanding of the odds and the math behind the numbers? How is the line set? How do lines move during the week on the NFL odds list? Oddshark will give you all the tools you need. They're a proven industry powerhouse. Oddshark has info from around the globe, giving you the chance to access the best sports odds on the planet. Whether you want to check out tonight's football odds, this week's hockey or basketball trends, or anything in between, head on over to Oddshark and start thinking like a shark today. They're an awesome resource, man. This is going to be a great time for betting because we got so many sports going on right now, too, which is so great. But we want to get into some, we want to talk about some futures, some college football futures.
Yeah, man. Here. Speaking of Oddshark, Chad, I want to ask you what is going on Oddshark right now in terms of college football futures. You and I talk all the time about how there's these four or five main teams who we know are going to be in the quote unquote final four in college football and how, from a parity standpoint, that's disappointing. From a betting standpoint, it makes things a little interesting.
Yeah, it does. So right now, Alabama, of course, they're going to be the number one favorite every year until Nick Saban retires, probably.
What are they listed at right now?
Yeah, so they're at plus 280, plus 260, and 250, all the way down to plus 245.
All right, so if you're not familiar with betting, plus 280 is almost 3-1 odds on Alabama right now. I don't think that's a terrible bet. I don't usually like to bet the favorites in the futures market, but considering the lack of parity in college football.
Considering there's about a 90% chance they're going to be in it, why not?
You know? Here's the only reason why I would say don't take that line right now, because by week one of the college football season, it's going to be the same.
Yeah.
It's not like you're getting a bargain because you're putting your money down in advance. Mm-hmm. So I'd say at least if you're going to bet that, wait a little while. There's no reason to, unless you got a lot of money and you don't care about, you're essentially putting your money in a locker for the next several months if you lock that bet in.
And if they were to lose a game, that right after they lose that game, might be a good time to make that bet as well.
No shit, good point.
Clemson, another favorite. They're anywhere from plus 500 to plus 300. So big difference there in between some of these sites. That's why you want to go to Oddshark so you can find this information out and everything. One team I wouldn't bet on is Duke. I would not put, even if they are, what is it? They're 50,000-1. Yeah, I still wouldn't do that.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Maybe for basketball.
Yeah. Possibly basketball. Yeah. Hawaii. Yeah. 100,000-1. Wouldn't do that either. You know?
No. How about, can I get a little LSU?
Yeah. LSU's plus 3,300, anywhere from plus 3,300 to 2,800, 2,500. So,
okay.
Big difference there. Yeah. You never know what could happen there.
How about a little Auburn?
Auburn. Let's check out Auburn here. If they can beat, you know, Alabama, they've always got a good chance. Plus 10,000.
Okay.
Or 8,000. So that's a big difference. That's a huge, huge number.
Always shop around for the best number.
Let's look at my Michigan Wolverines. We are plus 10,000 anywhere from plus 10,000 to 5,000. So 7,500 at one site, and we're 10,000 to one at several other ones. So yeah, that's probably not going to happen either. Well, you know, you never know.
Yeah,
we might have a new five-star quarterback this year. Never know what could happen. You know, that's right. Totally possible. And then let's look at Ohio State, the hated Ohio State Buckeyes, anywhere from 65 to one or up to 55 to one. So, yeah, you never know what can happen there. It's probably going to be, you know, some of the same teams that we've seen, Clemson, Alabama, everything like that.
Wait, Ohio State is 55 to one or 5 to 1? What is it?
Plus 550.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. So 5.5 to 1, almost 6 to 1 odds.
Yeah.
That's all good.
So, yeah.
There's some people out there that were rushing their like, betting websites.
They're like, I'm about to get, Odd Shark about to fire my ass here in a second. They're like, dude, you screwed up our site. Shit. But yeah, so there's a USC here, plus 6,000, plus 5,000, plus 3,000. That's a huge difference, man. This is why you got to go to Odd Shark to find these numbers.
So, my last question for you, Chad, is you got a crispy, you got a $100 bill right now. Yeah. You can only place it on one of these bets. What are you going to put it on?
Alabama, dude.
Yeah.
They've got 30 first-round picks on their team. You know what I mean? Or probably more than that. If you're talking about all four-year players and stuff like that, if you're talking about freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, they probably got 60 first-round picks on that team, you know? So.
Yeah. And with these future bets, I say, you know, plus 280 on Alabama doesn't seem like amazing odds. But let's imagine they're in the championship game right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the odds are going to be then? They're probably going to be minus 200 at that point.
Yeah, easily.
If not minus 280, minus 300. So if you can grab that now, I don't think that's a bad bet. But again, the odds aren't going to move much between now and the start of the season unless there's a crazy injury or some shit, which even if there is, they're so fucking deep that I don't think an injury is going to – one injury is going to derail.
They're just
going
to bring another five-star guy in to take his place. Oh, what was Alabama, you know?
Exactly.
If I was drunk, I'd probably put some money down on Arkansas State, though. You know, who knows? Who knows, man? Depends on how – if I'm drinking some of that Steel Austin, you know, I'll put $100 on Appalachian State versus Arkansas State, man. The national championship game is going to shock the world, dude. I can't wait. Wow.
You know we love the futures markets on this show because you get action. It's a bet that lasts through the whole season, which is kind of nice for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you head on over to Odd Shark to get all that information. Check out some of their – they've got awesome articles on there too. I love – they've got stuff. You know, we had Pam on last week, Pamela Maldonado from Odd Shark, talking about tennis. Got Wimbledon going on. We got the NBA finals about to start. NFL training camps about to start happening.
Preseason games are right around the corner,
there we
baby.
Go, man. Can't wait. So make sure you go to oddshark.com. Check out all this information. Read some of their articles. Check out the futures, all that stuff, man. That's a premier destination for anyone associated with the DMP CD Sports podcast. So with that being said, let's go ahead and bring in our guest for today. Our guest today is a member of the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame after being drafted number 7 overall in the 1985 draft and playing 12 seasons for the franchise. His career highlights include getting a Super Bowl ring, that was Super Bowl 31, and being named the Packers offensive MVP in 1989. In college at USC, he blocked for Heisman Trophy winner Marcus Allen, and in the NFL, he protected Hall of Famer Brett Favre's blindside. Today, Ken has his PhD and is a sociology professor at Central Oregon Community College. Ken is also a consultant for the NFL in a transition coach role to help players with obstacles after retirement. Recently, Ken has been in an activist role advocating for those who have suffered health consequences from the COVID vaccines. We wonder how many guys on earth have their Super Bowl ring and a PhD. Pretty rare.
Seriously.
Please welcome to the DMP CD Sports Podcast, Ken Rutgers. Ken, thanks for coming on the show, brother. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to be here with you guys. I just love your energy, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. We love your energy as well. Before we get into the interview, I got to ask you this. So, Ken, you were the blindside blocker, the most important position for a quarterback for one of our all-time favorite players and one of the greatest players in NFL history, Brett Favre. I know the question on everyone's mind is not what type of teammate he was or what are some of the speeches he gave in the locker room. The question on everyone's mind is, does Brett Favre really wear copper fit? We want to know this.
He probably does. I've never asked him that, but yeah, he probably does. You know, he's such a practical joker too. Yeah. You know, he's just a good old guy. And And here was his motivational speech. Come on, guys, let's go have fun and win. And that was about it.
Okay, Brett, we're on here.
What you see in Brett Favre, what you get, that's what you see is what you get. And that's who he is. And he's just a great guy, great teammate.
Yeah.
And a practical joker.
He seems like it. I often wonder if him and Jerry Rice are really going around the country terrorizing pickup football games and stuff, just running roughshod all over the United States, you know?
Yeah, well, they're having fun doing that. I don't know. It's it's funny. You know, look, who's got time to play practical jokes on people, right? Except quarterbacks, punters, and kickers. And of course, if you're a punter or kicker, you would never do that because you would, you're already getting sanctioned by everybody on the team anyway, right? You're already getting like canceled by everyone. So no punter, kicker. But if you're a quarterback and you got the time, he's a practical joker, right? And so every once in a while. You know, if you started picking on the offensive lineman a little bit, I'd sneak a little practical joke on him. You know, like a little icy hot on his jock, a little baby. And of course, I was never in the mix. I mean, he was always pulling practical jokes on like Frank Winter's bag of donuts. You know, Frankie Bag of Donuts and the other guy, Mark Chamora. And so I'd put a little something, and I'd just keep my mouth shut and just watch it unfold. Right? He'd blame those guys, and it was funny.
That's hilarious.
I heard icy hot and the jock, and then I heard baby powder where?
In the helmet, you put a little baby powder in the helmet, it's in your locker, you're getting ready to go out. Oh, I got to get my helmet, boom. And then all the,
That's hilarious.
Or a little Vaseline on the helmet, because Vaseline, I mean, trying to get Vaseline, it's like 10 shampoo treatments, just Vaseline.
Easily.
But now I tell you, I loved after I retired, I, did that sports career transition. And so I did some stuff with baseball players too.
Okay.
And I tell you, you talk about sick puppies, man, those baseball players. In the NFL, we're amateurs with practical jokes compared to baseball players because they got so much time.
Yeah, they don't do anything. They're just hot dogging in the outfield.
Well, that's what they're professional practical prankers, right?
Yeah. Well, we mentioned Brett Favre there for a little bit. Is there anything you could tell us about Brett that the public doesn't know? You said that he's a practical joker, but a lot of people don't know him as a person. You had that luxury.
Yeah, well, I was there with him for 5 or 6 years. And of course, he came in pretty, young guy. I was kind of an older guy. I had family and kids, and he was this, go out and party kind of guy. I really appreciated I got to witness his growth and maturity as a man. Going from like a young man and then the challenges he faced and really taking ownership and being honest and transparent about his challenges and his struggles, going through his dad's death and just being a real guy. And that was, I feel so honored to have, traveled those early years in his career and just watched him mature, but just like all of us, he puts his pants on one leg at a time as well.
Yeah.
I noticed. I don't
Wranglers
think
Wranglers too. He puts those Wranglers on.
We know that. I noticed it doesn't look like you're wearing your Super Bowl ring today. How often do you wear that bad boy out in public?
Well, every once in a while, at an event, or if I'm a place where people would appreciate seeing it, and it blesses them, and it makes them have like we were just. In Wisconsin, this last week, a week ago. And, so wore the Super Bowl ring and, we were staying in a hotel in Milwaukee and there were some Packer, fans. That's fun to mix it up with Packer fans, so you're Packer fans. And we start talking and stuff. And then they notice the ring. And so they get a kick out of it. So if other people get a kick out of it, and I think that then I'll wear it. But so
if I had a Super Bowl ring, I'll tell you right now, I'd be wearing that sumbitch to Costco. I don't care. Trying to get a better table at the Olive Garden. I don't know if you saw this Super Bowl ring here, but
it goes a lot farther in Wisconsin than it does out here in Oregon.
Yeah, I'm sure. What was it about Brett Favre that made him so great? What set him apart from other guys, do you think?
He just loved playing the game, and he was a kid, at heart. But yet he was, he had great talent. Obviously, he had great athletic talent, right? But he had such a spirit to win, and just kind of a gunslinging. Just a deep passion and desire to win. And he wasn't a guy that was gonna, browbeat you. You know, he, you know, we'd get in the huddle, and if it was a timeout, he'd like crack a joke to kind of break the levity, you know, to break That's the awesome. Tension, bring some levity to break the tension. Yeah.
What a cool guy.
Back to another Packers quarterback. I'm sure you're following what's going on with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I want to know, Ken, if you were the GM in Green Bay, how would you handle this situation where Rodgers is clearly frustrated right now?
Well, I think I'd probably try to mend the fence, right? But, you know, Rodgers has been there for a lot of years, and sometimes with coaches, with players, you know, there's a staleness that happens. So I would try to find a way to overcome the staleness, to mend that fence. And then if I couldn't, you know, I mean, that'd be my first objective, would be to try to do that. I think, you know, I talked to a lot of fans, and I think a fan's perspective would be, you know, he's a little bit full of himself. But I think that's where our sports culture is in many ways. I mean, I remember when the news first broke about Rodgers, and yeah, we'd heard about it a little bit here and there over the last few years. But when it broke this last spring, it was really interesting to see the sports media respond to that, in that it's okay to be the guy that can tell the team and the GM what to do. I mean, it kind of moved. I mean, I think it moved a little bit further down the field in that regard. And it's like, whoa. And so I think fans are like, no, you're a player, not the owner. Mm-hmm. But there's been an ongoing shift. And that was another, I think, movement in the culture.
Do you think that his frustration is justified with them taking Jordan Love last year in the draft?
Well, you know, there's so much irony out there in our culture.
Yeah, with Brett.
I mean, irony is just dripping, right? Yeah. So what happened when the Packers took Love is the same thing that happened when the Packers took Rodgers. It's like the irony of that is dripping.
It's crazy, yeah.
Full circle.
Ken, while we were researching your career, we found a super interesting stat you might not be aware of. We'll see. We found out that you recovered 11 fumbles in your career. That's absolutely crazy to us. Did you get tired of making up for your teammates' mistakes?
No.
So I'm tired of carrying this team.
Well, is that the record?
I wouldn't doubt it.
I looked up a couple comparables, because when I first saw that, I was like, that is a lot for a tackle. So I looked up some other tackles, and
when you miss the block and you give up a sack and it creates a tackle,
you're usually right there by the ball.
Believe that for a second.
Well, you know, back to that, like, offensive MVP, when you're an offensive lineman and you get the offensive MVP, I think that says more about the team than it does the offensive lineman.
That's fair. That might be true.
But kid, you've got a BA, an MBA, and a PhD. Will you save some degrees for the rest of us? I mean, are you just trying to accumulate all of them?
So what's weird about that is, like a year or two after I got my PhD in sociology, and I did my doctoral dissertation on sport career transition, because that was kind of my passion at the time. 2 years later, George Koontz, who was a linebacker for the Packers, we played together, and then finished his career in Seattle. He got his PhD and did the dissertation on the same topic. Now, a little bit different dissertations. Wow. Mine was more quantitative. His was more qualitative. But yeah, how often does that happen?
That's crazy.
That's
if I was you, anytime someone got mouthy, I would just point to one of the 34 degrees you have on your wall and just be like, hey, look, I might know a thing or two, okay?
I've been so fortunate to have had so many great life experiences, whether it's, you know, in business and real estate appraising or publishing or the space of sport career transition, and now, of course, teaching. I mean, it's – and coaching. You know, I do some coaching at the high school level, mostly football, but some shot put discus, and in Oregon we do throw the jab. So
nice. Talk to us a little bit about that decision to get the PhD, because we see all the time players going back to finish their undergrad degrees because they came out for the draft early, but it's not super common to see an NFL player with a long career go and extend their education to the master's and PhD level. So what kind of thinking and what was the rationale going into that?
Well, I was working for a publishing company. I was editorial director and doing some acquisitions, doing a lot of acquisitions work in Nashville with, you know, music artists that wanted to also get their message out through a book format, as you know, in addition to music. But while I was working there, I had a teammate, Tom DeVille, was kind of journeyman offensive lineman. He was a guard. We played next to each other. And in his early transition out of sport, he ended up in a real bad situation where he was in a police SWAT standoff. He was unarmed, but then ended up getting shot eight times and died. And we got on the phone, the offensive lineman, and we started talking. Mm. And he, people were talking about how he was depressed and unemployed and, just very challenged by that transitional shift in identity and status. And I thought, gosh, you know, the NFL had already started doing some player engagement for guys while they were active, but nothing was out there for guys once they left the game. And so I tried to say, hey, come on, NFL, or come on, different organizations, you know, and let's, or the players union, you know, let's do something for guys once they're done, because it's that identity is the biggest piece of that challenge of transition. And for a lot of guys, I mean, you're 30, 34, 28, and you might as well be 17. And, yep. You know, we just found ways to extend our college locker room. So for lack of that effort on anybody's part, I started a nonprofit and went full time into that. And so the doctoral dissertation was a way to formally study what was going on to try to find that magic bullet to help guys.
Nice.
At USC, you blocked for Marcus Allen during his Heisman season. I'm sure that was incredible. Can you tell us what type of player he was, any stories or memories you might have about him, and what was that season like? It had to be an amazing experience.
Oh, it was phenomenal. You know, I'll give you a little backup or a little backup story on that. So I came in as a freshman, and Charlie White had just won the Heisman Trophy the year before. You know, as a running back. And so I remember coming in with a guy named Todd Spencer, great running back, high school running back in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we were rookies, and you're coming in as a rookie, and we're in the rookie locker room. And Todd was like, man, I'm not getting any practice time. I'm not getting any playing time. I'm going to go up and tell John Robinson, you know, was the head coach at the time, and Robbie, called him Rob. I'm going to tell Robbie what it is, man. This is BS, man. So I said, Todd, we're freshmen. You know, we're just, well, yeah, but man, Charles White's gone now, and the spot was open. You know, the spot's open for me, and they're just not giving me a chance. So he goes on up, you know, to talk to tell John Robinson, you know, what the deal is. And he comes down within about 10 or 12 minutes, and he's like, oh, man. I'm like, Todd, what happened, dude? He's like, oh, man, I mean, if I work hard, you know, and I'm patient, you know, I'm going to get my opportunity. I'm so jacked up. I said, yeah, but you were just saying if you don't get the starting spot, you're out of here. No, man, I mean, I'm all in on this. Now, the problem is that, you know, he was upset because they took this fullback, right, and they were trying to make him a tailback, and his name just happened to be Marcus Allen, right? He had been blocking for Charles White. But yeah, but as far as Marcus Allen, great guy, great teammate, you know, all in on the team, you know, on the team concept, and just a lot of charisma, great guy.
And speaking of stories, I know with over a decade with the Packers, you must have some decent stories of your playing time. Anything stand out that you can share with us here today?
Yeah, well, there's so we were playing. I think it was, let's see here, it was Lindy Infante was the head coach his last year. He had a guy that was this motivational speaker. His name was Bob Whelan. And Bob was a Vietnam vet from Wisconsin, and he came in to give us a motivational speech, and we won. Mm. So he became the motivational coach.
Nice.
And we hired him for the rest of the season.
Nice.
And he was a Vietnam vet that you might remember going way back. He stepped on a landmine in the Vietnam War, and, both of his legs got blown off of him, right? And so he walked on his hands from L.A., to the Veterans War Memorial, Vietnam War, in Washington, D.C.
West Coast to East Coast? Holy shit.
Yeah, right. Wow. Now, we'd always, he was a guy that could mix it up. He's like, hey, Tony, Chad, you and me in my van, doors locked, winner come out alive. I, Bob Whelan, I'll take you down. You know, he's that kind of like, hey, guy, right? And so I think he liked the offensive lineman because we were like, we'd mix it up and we'd go, I'd kick your butt, Bob Whelan. I'd kick your butt in a heartbeat, man. You'd be like grime in the carpet of your van. And so we were getting ready to play Philadelphia, and Reggie White was, you know, the big guy that was, he eventually obviously came to the Packers, but, you know, when Holmgren and Wolf got there, but so Reggie White. And so they put Reggie over the center and then cover both guards. Right. So that kind of Buddy Ryan Bear defense, you know, with, and what puts a lot of pressure on the center. Right. So, and centers are, you know, they're either covered and they get help from a guard, or they're uncovered and they're helping. And my roommate was James Campen, who's now the great offensive line coach in the NFL. Great guy. He's with the Texans this year, was coaching for the Packers for over a decade. Mm. But boy, I tell you what, all of a sudden this week, you know, going against Reggie, knowing that he's going to have to, I mean, the guy's serious, you know, he's like focused. Right. So we get to the game and we're roommates, right? James Campy. So I said, hey, Campy, now you kind of know what it feels like to be a left tackle, right? You're not getting any help. You got a premier player against you. You're kind of puckered up this week. It's interesting. So in the first quarter, right? Late in the first quarter, we're third and long. And, you know, Reggie White starts coming towards the middle, and everybody's looking like, oh, crap, here's the moment, right, of truth. Here's the moment of truth where we're going to see what happens, right? And so third down, shotgun snap, quarterback fades back, and Reggie White forklifts James Campen. Oh. And as Campy's feet, you know, are flailing in the air, you know, Reggie just puts him back. And Campy goes, Jesus Christ. And, you know, and Reggie's the minister of defense, right? I mean, he's like this. I mean, he is actually an ordained minister.
Yeah.
He's minister of defense as well. I mean, and Reggie hits the quarterback just as the ball's thrown and knocks the you know, makes a bad pass. And as Reggie's walking back by Campen, he says to Campen, that wasn't God that did that. That was me. Your service, White. Your service. That's hilarious. Now, the funny part of that is Campy comes to the sidelines. I mean, when a guy, you know, and we all know what happened, we're all like, oh, man, right? So you just got forklifted, your feet off the ground, dumped, and it's like, whoa, you got to play three more quarters. So you come to the sideline, it's like, you better get it together, or you're going to go out there and you're going to give up another two or three. You're going to give up some more.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Campy's sitting on the bench, you know, and everybody else is like, ooh, you leave the guy alone because no matter what you say, it ain't enough. He's got to figure out how to get himself back in the right framework, right? Mm-hmm. But Bob Whelan, right? He's in a wheelchair, you know. And he gets up, you know, and he sits up next to Camp. He has no idea what just happened, right? This motivational speaker, Bob Whelan, right? I'm going to mix it up with you, and he goes, "Hey, Campy," and Campy looks over at him. He's trying to, and he's like, "What, Bob?" And he's like, "Hey, man, if you had a heart like mine, Bob Whelan, you'd be all pro." And we're all looking moment, at that and we're going, my gosh, what is going to come out of Campy's mouth? He says, Bob, if you had a heart like mine, you'd sprout legs. And Bob's like, I can respect that, man. And he gets the end of it, and he's like,
bad timing.
But I'll tell you, Reggie White, no, what a great. So in that game, Tootie Robbins was the right tackle, who had played for Arizona for a lot of years, that was still in and would play Reggie twice a year. And he was kind of that guy that knew how to block Reggie. You know, every guy's got at least another guy that you play long enough and somebody's going to have your number. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
And so so Tootie had a great game. Tootie Robbins, Tootie had a great game that day against Reggie. And so the next year we're recruiting first, you know, got free agency. Now we're recruiting Reggie to build the Super Bowl team. And in the weight room, there's a great picture from that game with Tootie Robbins dumping Reggie White.
Oh, wow.
Right. And I always say, I mean, look, if you don't make someone else's highlight film, then it's because you're in the stands.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it's just, you know, you're going to end up on when people play, like when there's like the 30 for 30 that comes on and it's a pass rushing defensive end. I'm pretty satisfied if I like miss out on that guy's highlight film. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you did your job.
But the picture of Tootie dumping, you know, depleting Reggie is in the weight room. And when he comes out for a visit, the strength coach is, you know, like Reggie sees it in the weight room.
Oh, shit.
And the strength coach is like, oh, man, I forgot to take that down. We're trying to recruit this guy. We got this picture up, right? Ah, now this is the kind of guy Reggie White was, you know, is he signed with the Packers. He asked the strength coach, can I have that picture? And the strength coach, Ken wow. Johnson's like, sure. Reggie takes it, signs it, and gives it to Tootie Robbins.
Oh, no, wow. Shit.
That's yeah, so cool. That's class right yeah, there, yeah. Man. That's wow. classy, right?
Yeah. What an awesome guy. Oh. Yeah, he was one of my favorite players as well growing up, man.
Yeah, you're worried about it hurting his ego, and he takes it and does the exact opposite and gives it as a gift. That's badass.
Yeah. Wow. He probably said, where's the other 30 pictures of me throwing him on his ass?
You know? He could have.
Well, everybody's got a highlight reel for themselves as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Ken, you're actually the third offensive lineman that we've had on this show, which is crazy. We've already had we've had Randy Cross and Jesse Sapolu as well. Some of the things you mentioned about some of the things that you're doing with players after they retire, helping them transition into the quote unquote the real world for them. Because a lot of these guys, they're like kids, you know, like they are big time star athletes in high school, then they become star athletes in college, and then they are in the pros, and then they're millionaires, and then they're just kind of like left to fend for themselves, and they haven't really had the experience, quote, like the real world, so to speak. And you're helping those guys transition to that. We talked with Randy and Jesse about some of the effects of CTE that some of their teammates have had. They said they don't necessarily think that they're experiencing any effects. Is this something that you're also trying to help people with? And also, I want to ask you, is this something that you notice as a big issue for some of your old teammates or yourself even?
Well, yeah, boy, that's a lot of good questions in there, Chad. We don't deal with the transitional aspects. If we see something like that, we're going to refer them to a doctor, right? Yep. And that's pretty rare. I think a lot of times too, football tends to mask. I mean, it's a sport that tends to easily mask mental health issues that aren't related to CTE. So once you're done playing and that covering is off, then it exposes it has the opportunity to expose some mental health issues. And you know, there's been a lot of brain science that's come about over the last, say, 5 to 10 years. It's like a muscle, you know, you need to work it out. So part of the challenge, I think, for guys, especially now that they're making the big money, is like, are you still using your brain as a muscle? Are you still working it out? Or are you just kind of chilling out and, you know, maybe drinking a little bit too much or not exercising it? And so if you don't use it, you lose it to some degree. So, but I'm not saying CTE is not real. I'm just saying it's a lot, it's more complex than just lumping everybody into this. But, one of my really, really good friends, Tunch Ilkin, who is an all-pro, for the, Pittsburgh Steelers right tackle. He spent his last year in Green Bay and we just became just great friends, but he just recently was diagnosed with ALS and he asked the doctor, you know, why, you know, he said, well, you know, you played football for a lot of years in the NFL. And of course, and Steve McMichael came out just recently after Tunch's announcement. And then Tunch also, I talked to him the other day and he was telling me he played with another guy in Pittsburgh. I didn't know the guy, but he played. But Tunch played with Steve McMichael in Green Bay, I think, for a little bit. But anyway, so you got three guys, right? That, I mean, that's weird, right? But you get clusters and you got to be careful, you know, statistically with, you know, want to make sure that, you know, there's a difference between correlation, causation, and even showing that, you know, you got to, it's touchy. I mean, you can go down the wrong road on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Indeed. Who else are you still close with, you know, former NFL players, whether they were teammates or opponents or in your work as a consultant with the NFL, who do you still keep in touch with these days?
Yeah, you know, John Michaels, who was drafted, you know, my last year to kind of take my place, and we're very close friends. And you know, I'm a offensive line. I mean, that's why you guys attract offensive linemen, because you guys, first of all, offensive linemen are real smart guys.
Yeah, I was just right? gonna say
Indeed.
That.
Yeah, and so, and you guys are smart guys, so you hang out with smart guys. Yeah. That makes sense, right?
Right.
And you know, it's and we're a good group of guys. You know, generally offensive linemen are the best group of guys. And I like trenches guys. So you know what? I stay in touch with the PR guy that was in Green Bay. Don Beebe, I talk to him every once in a while. Mark Chamara, Frank Winters, I see him every once in a while. Of course, Tunch. Great friend. Mark Murphy, John Anderson, a couple of Packer Hall of Famers as well. So Leroy Butler, funny.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, he was awesome. I loved him.
Yeah, I saw your face light up when you mentioned Leroy Butler. Any stories there with him?
You're good, man. You're good.
I like to play poker, so.
Well, I got easy tells, I guess. So, yeah, I remember Leroy and I did a function together at Lambeau Field, right? And, you know, they have like the Lambeau Leap, kind of a big statue kind of the whole, because Leroy was the one that invented the Lambeau Leap.
Yeah.
At least he gets credit for. Yeah.
Yep.
In Lambeau against the Raiders. I think it was December 27th. One of the coldest games ever played at Lambeau. It was like wind chill of minus 27 or something. So we were doing a photo op together, and I was like, well, I really wasn't part of the Lambeau Leap, but you know, so I said, hey, you know what really, let me show you what really happened in the Lambeau Leap. I ran over and I like helped him, you know, like,
give him a boost.
You put your passing photo off. And Leroy, he's such a funny guy. He's a great guy, great teammate. So yeah, I mean, just love the guy.
He seems like it. You mentioned Lambeau there. It's one of the, if not the most iconic stadium in the NFL, one of the most iconic stadiums in the whole world. For people that haven't been there, I've never been to a game there. You played there. Can you tell us what it's like and just the energy in that stadium?
Oh my gosh. I mean, first of all, it is just absolutely, you're right. Chad, it's like the marquee NFL venue for, you know, it's iconic. You know, the clock, they have a big clock at one end on the outside of the stadium. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, 5 minutes ahead of time or 10 minutes ahead. And it's like, that's Lombardi time, because Lombardi said always be 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Right. So they're, yeah, all those little details. That's, I mean, so they cool. have worked so hard to make it an amazing event. And of course they've added hotel venues. They have an outdoor like ski hill that you can, I mean, all kinds of stuff right now. One of the things I love doing, especially with guys that are freshly out of the game, like if I go back for a game and there's like some guys, I say, hey, have you ever been out to the tailgates? And they're like, no. I said, dude, are you kidding me? Come on, man. Let's go do a parking lot tour.
Nice.
And every single guy that I take, you know, because I know where all the, like the little hot spots are, yeah. and different, like there's the Packer Lope, right? That has like the Packer helmet with the antelopes, you know,
wow.
the Wisconsin deer hunting thing.
Nice. Yeah.
And they have these Packer superheroes, like the Packer Pope, you know, who wears, that's and he's so got cool. like the Lombardi trophy ring, and you can kiss the Pope's. They got what I call, you know, and every team has these superheroes, right? Mm. Whatever they call them, right? So yeah, so but to a letter, every single guy's like, I had no idea, because you know, we get in early, we either bust in or we get to the, and we don't ever see that. So it's just fascinating. And there's no better tailgaters, right, than the Cheeseheads.
Oh, I'm sure.
In Lambeau, yeah.
I mean, are people going through tables like in Buffalo? I guess we have to define better.
Yeah,
They're probably safer.
Probably some better food, I'm sure. Some good food there in Green Bay.
No doubt about it, for sure.
Hey, Tony, let's take a quick second to talk about one of our favorite sponsors.
That's right, Chad, 1740beardbalm.com. You can learn more about this product at 1740beardbalm.com. This is their signature product right here, and it's really good if you got a big old beard. But they've also got other stuff, man. Chapstick, they've got the beard soap, a whole bunch of other things. What I love about this company is they've agreed to send free product and gift cards to anybody who contacts us through Twitter, any of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, and just send us a funny text. If we read it on the air and we like it, they're going to send you some free stuff.
Badass, man. Yeah, you got to go to 1740beerbalm.com. Men, you got to take care of your beard, man. You can't be looking all scruffy and scraggly. You got yesterday's dinner in there and stuff like that. You ain't getting no tang looking like that.
Yo, it's a hygiene issue.
Yeah, for real. So make sure you check out 1740beerbalm.com.
Hey, switching gears a little bit, Ken, you've been in the news recently. You had a press conference recently. You've launched a website, C19VAX, VAX reactions.com. And I found your story of your wife's experience fascinating. I watched the press conference. And my issue with press conferences like this is, unfortunately, they get condensed down into these little minute and a half, 2 minute clips, and people don't really get to hear the full story. They get to hear the newsroom's edited version of the full story. Yeah. So we thought it'd be cool today to kind of give you an opportunity to sort of share the full story and have the listeners out there actually hear it. So where did this all start for you? How did you get involved in all this and your wife's experience?
Yeah, well, I mean, she was, she's working on her master's in counseling. And so she's, you know, at a youth, girls, youth home, like a correctionals transitional home, doing her internship hours. And so she was on the front, she was on the top of the list to get the vaccine for COVID, the COVID vaccine. And so she went and got it. And within a couple of days, she started having some neurological reactions, right? And so and it got progressively worse. And so, you know, she's getting MRIs and she's seeing doctors. And
if I can ask, what were the reactions? What was she feeling at that point early on?
Well, yeah, initially she had huge swollen lymph nodes, right? And then she started to get facial numbness and tingling and on her scalp and face and then and on her arms. And then it progressed into her legs.
Wow.
But yeah, and so... yeah. And it was 24/7 and some tremors, you know, some you could see, others that were like internal, like vibrations, like a cell phone might vibrate, but inside under your skin, you know, you can't see it.
Scary.
So yeah, she's been kind of, and she's been battling that for about 5 months. She found this group, and this was, and she took the shot in January you know, we're very much pro-vaccine. We're very much pro-science. You know, I mean, shoot, I'm a PhD. It's like, I'm a social scientist. I mean, yeah. Am I pro-science? Absolutely. I mean, we need science more now with all the crazy claims that are out there than ever before. But so she joined this group and the group's trying to get a voice, right? The group's trying to say, hey, can we, you know, we need to be heard. We need to be believed. We need to be seen by the medical community so we can get help and help ourselves, help others that don't have a voice and help those that come behind. And they're nice, mostly women, because the neurological tends to affect women more. And they're just really nice women. And I'm like, God, you guys need to be a little more. Yeah. You guys need to be like the tiger lady. You, you need to go kick some ass. Right. And so I said, well, let me put up a website for you. My brother does websites. So let me put up, you know, we'll put up a website. You guys tell us what you want. We have some ideas. At least you can get the word out to the, because there are a lot of people are out there on their own, isolated, kind of in the desert looking for any kind of like, I'm not going crazy, which is kind of like what happens with NFL players, right? Once they leave the game, they're isolated. What they feel like they're going through in transition is like only their, you know, dealing with it, and they find each other, which is, you know, which is a huge help to go, oh, I'm not alone. What I'm going through is normal. Yeah. And so that was kind of the focus on the website. So then they started posting some stories. So I said, well, let me do some interviews. I did interviews with NFL players on this area. Let me do some interviews with you guys, and I'll post your interviews online. And so I started editing them and I was like breaking down in tears. Well, you got like women who have been, and some guys too, right? I don't want to leave the guys out, but they're paralyzed from the chest down. They can't use their legs. They're in a wheelchair. Some of them, not all of them, right? Yeah. But they have vibrations and they've got seizures and paralysis. And a 12-year-old girl who was in the youth trial, right? And it's like, I don't want to get alarmist on anybody because it's a very small percentage, right? I mean, less than 1%. But nowadays, right, we don't have to say we can help you, but we don't have, we can help everybody. It's not either or. It can be both and, but you have to have a voice and you have to be seen. So I'm just trying to help them be seen. And I was doing these video editing and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I thought, wow, what low-hanging fruit for a politician? Mm-hmm. I mean, duh, right. You could like be a really good guy and help people that really need help that don't have a voice.
For a change.
And man, these are like really sad cases, right? And I'm like, wow. And I'm thinking, man, who would be that politician? I don't know. And for whatever reason, Ron Johnson's voice came to mind. He's a senator in Wisconsin. That's why I probably was like, oh, well, I mean, maybe I can throw, you know, the whole Packer thing around and get, you know. So I called him up. I never met him before. And he called me back and he said, I said, hey, if this is in your wheelhouse and you're willing to help us have a voice to be seen, heard, and believed, and then cared for, it seems like the right thing to do. And he was like, yeah. So he got on a Zoom call with the group a few days later on a Sunday evening for 2 hours and just listened to the different stories. And he was blown away by, oh my gosh, it's crazy. So he said, well, you know what? I mean, I'll help give you a voice. Let's do a press conference. He'll do it in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and you can tell your story. And that's what we did. And I think change starts with being honest and transparent. And they told their honest, true stories.
Yeah, it was. If you haven't seen the full press conference, I really encourage people to go check it out. The stories are super emotional, heart-wrenching in a lot of ways. Why do you think it is that you have to have a press conference in order to get the news out there? Why are these voices being ignored? Because I want to contrast this to when people got COVID infections and died, we had moments of silence. I haven't seen any moments of silence for anybody that's died from the vaccines. And while rare, it has happened, you know? And there were all these stories when people were getting COVID about this random 19-year-old boy who was a high school athlete, was perfectly healthy, and now he got COVID and his life is ruined. But we're not seeing those same stories in the, yes, rare, but in the rare circumstances when people are injured by the vaccines. Why doesn't the media want to touch these stories? What is going on?
Well, I think there's a fear. Tony, that's a great question. I think there's this fear that if we put that out front, it will create vaccine hesitancy. I mean, and that will then detract from the goal of reaching herd immunity, right? That's our goal, is to overcome the pandemic, right? I think what's happening though, I mean, and that's a legitimate concern, right? But I think what's happening is you do have people that are telling their, and people see these stories, they hear these stories, and they identify them as true. They sense, people know the truth. When someone's telling their story, they know, most people know whether you're a phony or a fraud or whether you're telling the truth. And these folks, they're telling the truth, right? And so then when our social institutions, our government, our media, our healthcare community, our medical community tries to squash that and discredit that, I think that creates greater erosion of public trust in our social, and we don't want that. So I think, and especially, you know, in this woke culture, I think, it's got certainly double edges on the sword, right? But if you're not towing the party line, right, out of the fear, right, you end up being sanctioned, you know, it's kind of a Kafka trap, you know, Frank Kafka in his novel, and you know, kind of saying, hey, creating a culture that if you're not exactly towing the exact line, then you're guilty of and worthy of being demonized, right? And that's kind of, it's unfortunate, because what that does is it takes away from getting the best results. And I think the best results on this is, yeah, we can do both. We can still move towards herd immunity, and we can take care of those, you know, that have by no fault of their own drawn the short straw and need help.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to ask you, do you think that you would have gotten this platform if you weren't a former star NFL player?
Well, that's bothersome to me, because it shouldn't be that way.
Exactly.
You know, people that don't have the status of being a former player or whatever the status is, should not be exempt from having their voices heard. So that really, that's troublesome to me. But to answer your question, I think it opens some doors. However, on the other hand, you know, I've thrown that around to other politicians, and it didn't do a darn thing. So I don't know.
Here's something that's troublesome for me. I agree 100% with your potential explanation for why the media coverage is happening the way it is. Journalists maybe don't want to fuel this vaccine hesitancy. Why, and I agree that's the case, but why I take that personally and get frustrated with that as a former journalist is that's not your damn job. Your job is to tell the story, not to push an agenda, not to push a political agenda, not to try to get more people vaccinated or not vaccinated or push your beliefs on people. Your job is to tell the facts and to tell the story and then let people make up their mind.
Yeah.
And when possible, unless you're writing a column or something otherwise, you're when possible trying to be as objective as possible. And so if you're right about that, and I think you are, that journalists are not telling this story or their editors are not allowing them to tell this story because it might fuel vaccine hesitancy, that's really damn unfortunate for the 1% or less than 1% of people who are struggling and getting ignored. In a way, they're kind of collateral damage in this, which is really sad.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. You're exactly right. They're collateral damage. And I was talking to my buddy, you know, that's the PR guy for the Buffalo Bills. And he said, and I mean, you guys could probably relate to this being in journalism for as long as you have been. He says, you know, several years ago, I started seeing this shift, you know, in news reporting where a fan would make a claim. And if the reporter was framing the story in that direction, then the fan's statement or claim was absolute concrete fact. Then they'd ask, of course, because it supports the framing of the journalist. So then you got journalistic bias, right? That which is kind of what seems like you were referring to.
Yep.
So then the reporter says, well, hey, head coach, what about this? And the head coach lays out the facts, right? And then how it's reported is the fan is concrete factual. And then it's reported as, and the head coach responded or thinks that, or you know, so it's kind of vague. So it's fact by the fan. It's kind of kind of squishy, but so it's already framed for the reader. It's already a done deal. And that, I think that comes out of bias. I don't think in most cases journalists are coming in and going, yeah, this is the bias story I'm going to tell. And I'm going to, you know, I think it just kind of naturally happens out of human bias.
Yeah, I agree for sure. Maybe even a subconscious bias that they're unaware of for sure.
Yeah.
Going back to your wife's story, where is she at now with her health? What are the doctors saying? What's the latest? Is this a long-term thing? Do they know how long these symptoms are going to go on? Where are things at?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything is so new, you know, COVID and the vaccines. And I think the medical community is stumped and they're a little rocked on their heels. And how are they going to respond when they've been the solution for so many people? They don't know. As far as my wife, I mean, we're both very concerned that we don't know. I mean, she said, you know, will this result in degenerative cognitive abilities? Will I end up, you know, in a mental institution, you know, some kind of a, will I always be looking, you know, over my shoulder the rest of my life, wondering if, nobody knows. Wow. And that's partly why we want to be heard. You know, this group wants to be heard and seen and believed and then cared for, is that, you know, it's like, help us, you know, and we don't have to give up getting to herd immunity. We don't have to give that up. We can do both, right? But yeah, she's very concerned for the long-term effects.
You said recently that your wife was part of a Facebook group for vaccine victims, and it was recently deleted by Facebook, and that had a big-time effect on her. Can you just walk us through what happened there, and when? How recently was this that this group was deleted?
Yeah. So just this last Wednesday.
Wow.
Got a call in the she got a call in the morning. Facebook has canceled our private group. It's like, whoa, man, private group. That's interesting, right? So, which is too bad because, again, it's not the group's stories that's eroding trust in our social institutions. Yep. It's the reaction to those. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, Facebook loses credibility and trust.
Yes, they do.
And so, yeah, it's just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing that's crazy. It's like, well, for a lot of the people in this group, their lifeline to emotional and physical sanity and health is linked to this group because the medical community, they're still trying to figure it out, right? So what they have, it, the only thing in many ways they have right now is each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wipe that out, and now all of a sudden it's like, wow, the one lifeline that they were relying on that's most helpful, you just took out. And that's serious stuff in the condition these people are in.
Super vulnerable people who are relying on each other. What was the explanation from this big tech company, Facebook, in terms of why they got rid of the group? What were they unhappy with?
Yeah, well, they've made the appeal, and they're asking for, but you know, it's, I think what it was labeled as, dangerous misinformation. I don't know. They're working on trying to get this figured out.
Well,
but,
that's,
you know, what's going on in your body is dangerous misinformation. You know,
sharing your opinion. I think that's part of the problem, is that when these things happen, there isn't a clear, and YouTube does it as well. It's not just Facebook. We're not just picking on Facebook. A lot of companies do this, and there isn't a clear explanation or an immediate explanation. Yeah. It's like an umbrella copy and paste policy. You know, we don't like that it falls under this, but it's not super clear what this is. What did we do wrong? And in the meantime, days and weeks are going by while you're trying to get an explanation. And now this lifeline, this resource doesn't exist during that time while you're trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, they're allowing videos and songs to remain up. They're talking about buttholes and stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, well, that seems a little dirty. That's appropriate. You know what I mean? For children and everyone else to consume. But we can't have dangerous misinformation, as they call it out there.
Yeah, it's wild. It's crazy times. It's a crazy landscape we're in right now with the information sharing and technology. It's really wild right now, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not like towing the exact party line with whatever socially constructed, you know, as being the line you have to tow, then you're considered guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you can say, hey, let's have a critical thinking, a dialectic about this, and let's storm a little bit. Let's have a conversation to get to a better place. It's robbing our culture, our society, of getting the best results, I think, because through that dialogue, you reach a better place.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that there's some similarities that with those groups and everything like that. I've experienced a lot of grief in my life, a lot of loss and everything. And one of the most helpful things for me was being around other people that were feeling the same way, or people that were going through the same tribulations and everything like that. It made me feel more whole, and it made me feel like I wasn't alone and everything like that. And it seems like this is very similar. When you take that away from people, it can be devastating, I'm sure.
Yeah, when other people see that, you know, it erodes trust, you know. So, but I got to ask you guys a quick question.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's okay, can we switch?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you were the GM of the Packers, what would you guys do with Rodgers? I'm gonna come back.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'll say this, because this is a very polarizing topic, and I will say I'm a Browns fan. I grew up about an hour south of Cleveland, so I'm a huge Browns fan. But I've always loved the Packers, and the Browns have barely been a franchise, you know what I'm saying, for the last 20 or so years. We're kind of on the upswing now. But so I've always liked the Packers. I always loved Brett Favre. He was one of my favorite players. I remember watching you play, Ken, as well. And then now Aaron Rodgers is one of my favorite players. And so I understand where he's coming from. I thought that was, to be honest with you, I do think it was a little bit of a mistake. I understand the comparison between Brett Favre and everything, but Brett Favre, on one hand, was kind of in, had one foot in and out the door and everything like that. He was saying he's going to retire and come back and all this. Whereas with Aaron Rodgers, I feel like he's still capable. Obviously, he just had an MVP season. He took that personally, obviously, and I think it was a bad move by whomever it was that made that decision, whether that was LaFleur or the GM. But I mean, I would try to, of course, like you said, patch things up. You're not going to get another Aaron Rodgers. Those things don't, he doesn't just grow on trees. He is a once in a lifetime player. So yeah, I would do everything I can. I'd be sending him ice cream. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Roses, whatever you got to do, send him all kinds of stuff to try and patch that up. And then obviously if he's adamant and is just like, no, I'm sticking to my guns, I'm not coming back, then you have to explore trading him, obviously. And I mean, you would get quite a, I can't imagine the haul you would get for the MVP of the league, you know. But yeah, I would do everything I could to try and keep him. That would be first and foremost.
Now, I don't know Aaron personally, obviously, but I posted on Twitter when this first came out. I said, don't underestimate his stubbornness.
Yeah.
And this is just me being judgmental of somebody that I've never met before, but he seems to be the kind of person that if you piss him off,
yeah,
he is going to dig in his heels. And so all these Packer fans, there are some of them that are like, oh, he'll come around. Don't worry about it. Don't be shocked this takes a turn you might not like. But we had Randy Cross on the show, and I appreciated his comments. He said, if you're looking at what has happened so far, take notes of how the GM in Green Bay has handled this and do the opposite of that.
Yeah,
wow. Because he's sort of putting on a clinic of what not to do, not how
Randy
not to
Cross,
handle.
Man, he can always bring it down to the lowest common denominator. Yeah. Boom, hit you with it. Yeah. I mean, he's really good at that. Yeah,
absolutely. And I kind of agree with that. Yeah. I think that while some people will label Aaron Rodgers a diva, and there may be some personality rubs there with him, when you've got someone that good and that talented, who was the MVP last year. I mean, this isn't someone who was an MVP 6 years ago and has fallen off. When you've got someone that good, I think you've got to kind of swallow your ego a little bit. How many times have we seen this in other sports? I mean, how about the Bulls with their leadership and how they handled sort of the dismantling of the Bulls? And it seems to me that their egos got in the way.
Yeah.
We're bigger than the players. We're bigger than the players. You got to swallow your pride sometimes. And I think that's not what's happening in Green Bay right now.
Yeah, great, great perspective. Well, I'm hiring you guys for the GM.
We wouldn't be in this position if I was there.
I'll write you a letter of recommendation, man. You guys are awesome. Yeah. And you know, and your Aaron, I mean, gosh, I love what, as a former left tackle, you know, an offensive line, I love how he puts a little something like that on, and he's, I mean, he makes the blocking so much easier. I mean, it is art. Yeah. It's an art form.
It really is.
The guy's, I mean, he's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's one of my favorite players to watch. Green Bay has been so spoiled, I'll say, because you went from Brett Favre, arguably, you know, I mean, I would put him, for my generation, I'd put him easily in the top five, maybe even top three quarterbacks of all time. And then you got Aaron Rodgers, who's arguably in the top five or top three as well. So just an embarrassment of riches. And it's awesome because, like I said, I'm a big Rodgers fan. Now, this is the question I would pose to you guys, is that if Rodgers comes to you and says, I'll come back under the condition that you trade Jordan Love, what do you do in that situation?
Because
you gotta admit your mistake. You're probably not going to get the same return on him.
Well, let me say this, and correct me if I'm wrong. Publicly, he has stated he doesn't have a problem with Jordan Love being there. But we all, I don't want to speak for other people. A lot of people suspect that is a big rub there for sure. If that were to happen, I guess it depends on how much you like Jordan Love.
I got to trade him, man. It's Aaron Rodgers. And as we've seen there's not many Tom Brady's, but let's say, what is Aaron Rodgers, 36, 37? I think he's my age. So what, he could play another 5-6 years, you know what I mean? You could possibly win 2 Super Bowls in that time. I would trade him, man. If that's what Aaron Rodgers asked me to do. And you know damn well that would probably fix the situation. If they go out and trade him, Aaron Rodgers like, okay, I understand now. You guys made a mistake. They, you know, backtrack and apologize and everything like that. I feel like that would probably quiet the situation a little bit. But I would trade him, man. It's he's not – what are the chances that Aaron Rodgers is going to be as good as Brett Favre? Very slim, you know, but it did happen. And then now, you know, what's going to be the same with Jordan Love? But I still think Aaron Rodgers has got 5-6 more years in him, man.
Yeah, you want to make him really happy, trade him for a wide receiver.
Yeah, right?
That'll do the trick.
Well, I'm telling you, let me know when you guys are ready.
I'm ready. I'll move to Green Bay.
Yeah, when you're ready to sign up for GM, man, I'm all behind you guys. That's awesome. Yeah. And you know, I agree with you guys. Chad, you got to – yeah, that's good. I think – and I you know, Jordan Love, I mean, I grew up in Bakersfield. He's a Bakersfield guy. I mean, you know, it's like – but you know what? Hey, you got to win, man. You got to win. And if that means – and I would really – you're right, Tony. Trade Jordan for a marquee wide receiver. Yeah. Oh, that'd make him really happy. I think that's really, it's been a while since I've talked with Aaron, you know, when he was young in his career, I was doing, you know, some NFL work. And so when he was playing behind Favre, you know, talk to him every once in a while and encourage him. But Yeah. I mean, I think he was looking for, hey, we have opportunities to pick up some weapons on offense. Let's do it. And I think he was disappointed in that not happening.
Well, we have to remember the context of the Jordan Love pick. Okay? Yeah. Because in my opinion, it wasn't just the fact that they picked Jordan Love. It's the fact that they had other holes. Remember, they had just got smoked by the 49ers in the playoffs big time. Yeah. And they had glaring needs. Could not stop Raheem Mostert. Could not stop the run. They had glaring needs. And not only did they not address those, they spent the pick on a quarterback who's not going to see the field unless
for 4 or 5 years at least.
Exactly. So it was like a two-part problem. You drafted a quarterback and you didn't address with an earlier round pick the glaring needs where we just got smoked by 20 points or whatever in the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that
Jordan Love might. I mean, I would guess he's probably in the position where he's like Aaron was like, yeah, I don't want to sit around on the bench.
Yeah.
I was a first round quarterback. Trade me and let me have a chance.
Yeah, because there's a possibility he's not going to play for another 4 or 5 years. And I think when you drafted him, then you immediately put a cap on Aaron Rodgers' career and say, because you're not going to keep a backup quarterback for 10 years. You know, you're not going to have him sitting on the bench for 10 years. He's a first-round pick, and you're going to have to re-sign him. You're going to be spending an absurd $50 million at one position. You can't do that. You know what I mean? It's just not sustainable for a franchise.
Well, okay, so if you guys were the GM, okay, now you got to eat a little crow, but you got to also save face. How do you do that?
Well, I would try to trade him for 2 seconds or something, like the 2 second-round picks, if you could get that, or a second and a third. I mean, yeah, that's true. You might not be able to.
But how do you save public face, you know, because you're going to have to eat a little crow, right? You have to walk it back. But then you also want to keep, you know, you're also got your own ego and your own, you want to save public face. How would you, would you say, make that work? I'm interviewing you guys, right?
Okay, that's a great question.
No, I would throw LaFleur under the bus. That's what I would do.
Ooh. Okay,
I'll say it's that guy's fault. He talked me into it. I had one too many Hennessy's.
Would you meet with LaFleur before? Would you just like
I would just
come
go ahead
out of nowhere? Like
LaFleur's
going to
be texting me in the middle of the press conference, like, "What the hell's going on?" I'm like, "Sorry, buddy, it's Aaron Rodgers, man. Trying to keep him happy. All right, you screwed this up. You did screw this up." He's like, "No, it was your
pick." I don't know. Man, based on that, I don't know if I can hire Bill. You're brutal, man.
Hey, I'm trying to keep the frame. I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. All right, I want Aaron Rodgers happy.
Okay, but you're throwing your head coach without
tricky. Warning,
yeah. Man. Well, if he doesn't go for it on fourth down again next year, he might be looking for a job anyway.
Sorry.
We just lost Packer viewers.
No, they got a great franchise. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because this is going to also, you alluded to it a little bit there, Ken, this is going to dictate what a lot of other franchises are going to do with their disgruntled players and quarterbacks. Sure. We've got Deshaun Watson. It seems a lot more recently we're having disgruntled quarterbacks. And so this is going to dictate what happens 5 years, 10 years down the line for some of these other guys that are ticked off and don't want to play for their team.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you start to see a shift where you're getting disgruntled left tackles, then you got some serious issues in the NFL.
Yeah. This hasn't gotten to the NBA level yet, you know, where it's just like everybody that's buddies are playing on.
It may be coming though.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, Who knows? I tell you, this is why I love sports, and this is why I love this show, because this episode is going to be on the internet forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
20 years from now, when Jordan Love has a very successful career or doesn't,
people can
come back and look at this episode. Or if Rodgers goes on, like you said, and does the whole Tom Brady thing and has 5 more successful years, becomes a no-brainer almost at that point,
in my
opinion.
2 Super Bowls.
Or if I don't think he will, but if he for some reason falls off, maybe injuries, in a couple of years, this conversation is going to look real interesting in 15, 20 years.
Well, and hopefully the whole woke cancel culture will subside, right? And we can get back to like, hey, you can joke around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even like Chad, for you being a comedian, I mean, look what's happening in the comic world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy.
Don't get us started, man.
Hopefully when people look back on this episode, they can go, we get the nuances now.
Yeah, I remember what that was like.
There's some humor and some tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I hope society swings back the other way and kind of overcompensates, because we're way too far on one side right now.
I think it will. There's certain venues in Austin that I perform at that, I'm terrified to say anything. I have to keep it very PC. I have to, elementary jokes, so to speak, because I know there's someone just waiting to tape this and put it on the internet and tell everybody about it, and then I'm never booked again, you know. And so that's something you have to be very conscious of. That's something I'm learning, honestly, as a comedian in this day and age, especially in Austin's changed a little bit from what it used to be. And That's something I'm learning every day, is that there's some venues I can go all out and say whatever the hell I want, and then there's some venues I got to reel it in. And it sucks as a comedian. I'm a person as a comedian that I want to be able to say whatever I want. I think it's art. You know, it's a safe space. It should be a safe space. It's a stage and everything. But you unfortunately, in today's day and age, you have to be conscious of that, because I've got a son. I've got a 9-month-old son, and I'm trying to provide for him, and I don't want to be canceled and working for Uber or some shit. You know what I mean? So I have to be conscious of it, unfortunately, you know, and it's, yeah. It's hopefully this isn't going to last much longer. I feel like there is, the pendulum is swinging back.
Well, you already just offended millions of Uber drivers out there. So.
Yeah, it's always going to be somebody, you know.
On a serious note, Ken, being someone who is in the public light, who had a long career with the Packers, do you have that fear when you're maybe doing interviews like this, or when you're in public, or just talking to someone at dinner that you meet in public? Do you worry that the things that you say are going to have repercussions if they're worded not quite the right way, et cetera?
Yeah, I think you learn early when you start doing interviews, you know, as an athlete, you learn pretty early, you know, how to stay on track, how to be disciplined, you know, and guys mess up every once in a while. They say some pretty outrageous stuff, but they're learning too, you know. And then also, you know, as a college professor, I'm up lecturing about social issues and culture. And
yeah,
so yeah, I mean, you gotta, you know, be disciplined and stay, but it is crazy, right? It's just absolutely. And for my sociology mind, it's just mind boggling.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I would say that there's what's funny to me is that all these people that are taking part in cancel culture, I never knew so many saints existed in the world. You know what I mean? Like, these guys have no skeletons in the closet. They've lived an awesome life, and they've never stepped on anyone's toes or said the wrong thing or misspoke or something like that. It's fascinating to me that so many saints exist amongst us.
Well, you know, yeah, we're so busy virtue signaling, right? We don't smell our own poop.
Yeah, no, that's exactly
kidding.
Right.
No kidding. You know, speaking of someone that's gotten a lot of scrutiny for what he said in the public, I'm really curious to ask you about Cole Beasley, current wide receiver right now. He's essentially come out and said he doesn't agree with how the NFL is handling the non-vaccinated players. He at one point alluded to retiring, you know, as an option for him because he doesn't like it. And man, he is getting
roasted
on Twitter and everywhere right now.
There's been some people that have been getting his back and everything like that. But yeah, for the
it's
most
rare,
part,
though.
Yeah,
there's been a couple.
He's been getting roasted.
Yeah, for sure. Any thoughts on kind of his position or what you're seeing, the reaction, backlash to what he said, et cetera?
Well, it seems to me, and I'm only looking from a distance, kind of trying to read the tea leaves, you know, knowing the culture. I mean, obviously he's been around, he's a veteran. He's to make a statement like that and that, you know, to have played so many years, I'm guessing he had thought about it. You know, he's planted his stake and he's saying, hey, this is who I am. You know, I think he said something like, I'd rather play unvaccinated and die than not play. And so, I mean, I don't think a guy like Beasley, who's been around a little bit, is going to make that kind of an offhanded comment without having actually thought about it. I think the other thing that's interesting too is, you're not hearing a lot of guys say that. I mean, that's kind of interesting, right? You're not having a lot of guys, and I'm sure there are people, you know, there are guys, I mean, the NFL, their vaccination rates are on the lower end. I mean, 30-40% for some teams or less. There's a concern with the league. I mean, the league's very concerned about this, you know, this unvaccinated trend or vaccine hesitancy, whatever you want to call it. And they're trying to do their best to navigate, you know, the league's trying to do their best to navigate it. It's interesting times for sure. But I think, you know, you're certainly not hearing any rookies coming out with this.
Yeah, definitely not.
And frankly, that's why I respect what Cole Beasley said. I don't agree with everything he said, but I respect his position because I think he's almost martyring himself a little bit because he's saying what other people can't say. A rookie, I don't think, feels comfortable saying that. And he has, you know, he's a very prominent player.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's maybe speaking on behalf of some people who want to say it but can't, I respect the hell out of that for sure.
Yeah. I think I've read interviews with LeBron James, and he has kind of skirted away from saying whether or not he got the vaccine. He doesn't want to talk about it. That leads me to believe that he didn't, you know, which it's totally, you know, this guy spends $1 million a year on his body, making sure that he's able to play and recuperate and everything. That's totally his decision, obviously. But yeah, he won't touch it. You know what I mean? And he's kind of alluded to the fact that he hasn't gotten it, but people kind of leave him alone because he's LeBron. But it would take someone big like that to come out and kind of maybe change people's perspective a little bit, I think. But
yeah, and I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole because, of course, we're not debating today the efficacy of vaccines, et cetera. I really want to focus on the people who have been victims of the vaccine who have been damaged. Very rare.
And free speech.
But that's for sure as well. So going kind of back to that topic in your press conference, it's been a few days now. What has been the reaction that you've heard from the public since the press conference?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mixed. Obviously, I think the vast majority of the media, you know, has attacked Johnson. They certainly haven't attacked, you know, the people that spoke up and shared their stories because, I mean, it's like it's terrible, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think the other thing is they're every single one of them to a T was pro-vaccine, pro-science, you know, the idea that we could do both, you know, reach herd immunity and help people. We don't have to leave people behind. We don't have to abandon people. So I think the other thing, too, is a lot of support as well, mostly coming grassroots support, like, man, you guys. And on the website, the whole point of the website was so that people who were in the desert could find, you know, other people that were experiencing the same journey. So that it's like, I'm not going crazy. This is not as, I'm not alone, right? There's something about being human and going, gosh, it's nice to know I'm not alone in training camp. I mean, now I know training camp's a lot easier with these guys today, right? Than it used to be back in the day. But I mean, there's no way you could get through training camp if you were doing it alone, but doing it together, you can get through that hell. Right. And I think that's the power of this. And you know what? I would love, you know, how about this? I would love to shut down this website today because that would mean that the medical community is willing to say, okay, we need to take this serious. Oh, great. I can shut it down, you know, because I've had people ask me, well, do you have a newsletter? I go, no, I don't want this to be my, I don't want to be a website, social media monetizing. I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. I want these people to get help, you know, reasonable, responsible help from the medical community. And then we shut the site down and their help. So, yeah, that's kind of where things are. So I think mostly grassroots and most people are saying, hey, thank you for speaking out and being our voice because we do need help.
And we're social beings, naturally. Human beings are very social and we need that support from other people. That's how a lot of people get through so many challenges in their lives. I can only imagine how frustrating it must feel. Like, for example, you in the press conference, I believe you had, there was a 12-year-old girl, Maddie DeGuerre from Ohio. And she took part in the vaccine trials and she's been admitted to the ER 9 times and has been hospitalized for a total of 2 months. And doctors wanted to put her in a mental institution because they said her symptoms were caused by anxiety. Have you had a chance to talk to her about that and will she recover and what's going on with that whole situation?
Oh, yeah, I've spent some time interviewing her on Zoom, but also I've spent a couple of days with her in Wisconsin. And I tell you, she's sitting at we're getting ready for the press conference and we're having breakfast and she's telling jokes, you know, she's got her iPhone out, you know, and you're talking about somebody who's going into the eighth grade right next year. She'll be an eighth grader, right? She got the shot. She thought, I think there's a lot of pressure and you're getting some social capital and status, you know, by, you know, having, hey, look at me on Facebook. I got the shot, you know, I voted sticker. And so there's this status that comes with it. And they were all excited to be, you know, part of the solution and help the world. And, you know, but other than her physical conditions, right? She's a normal going into eighth grade girl, you know, a middle schooler, and she's telling jokes. And so I'm like going, you were diagnosed with like some mental health issues? Are you kidding me? Hey, can we do like a triple team high low on the doctors that did that? Were you guys up for that?
Yeah, I'm down. Let's go. Yeah. Yeah, tell me where to show up.
Man.
But you know, I don't want to throw the medical community on the bus. I think mostly they're you know, they don't know what to do because it's all new, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good doctors that are working on in the trenches, right? That are working on trying to figure out. They see it.
And there's
but they're afraid to speak out.
Oh, I'm sure. Because they'll get ostracized quickly, it seems. And there's no legal recourse for these people either, like for your wife and for Maddie. There's no legal recourse because that.
And you know what the crazy thing is you talk to them. They don't want. They're not even. Yeah, they're not. They're just saying, I want to get better. I want my daughter's life back. You know, I want. I mean, you know, there's no talk of that for which is, you know, I mean, some people go, well, that's crazy. You can make. It's like, no, they just want. They just want their help. They want to be helped.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see that.
Many industries out there who can't be sued. I mean, you have to go through a special vaccine court, and it's a very special process if you're interested in that sort of compensation. And so that's another thing. These people are so vulnerable. I mean, imagine the money. You said go back to the hospital nine times. Who knows, you know, the financial upbringing of this family, but that is freaking expensive. Yeah. Who knows if they have insurance, and then you're not able to quickly get the compensation. So that's. That's a systemic issue, I think, in the industry. Totally. That's a problem that a lot of people don't want to talk about.
Tony, look at you, Vaccine Court, man. You've done your homework on this. That's impressive, man.
My girlfriend is really well read on this, too. So
it's an interesting topic, man. It really is because this industry is powerful. I mean, the lobbying you talked about, you essentially lobbied your senator, right? We don't think of that as lobbying because, you know, you weren't a hired paid lobbyist, right? Yeah. But that's essentially what you did. And you're a small guy lobbying your senator. On the other end of that, we have the pharmaceutical industry that has trillion-dollar
corporations,
large lobbyists. And so I sort of see a David versus Goliath thing, you know, not to say that they're the bad guys and we're the good guys. I don't want to. But in terms of the power and the influence and the resources, if there's a narrative that industry doesn't want to highlight, for instance, 1%, less than 1% of people are injured by this vaccine, you're up against that. And they don't want those stories out there. And, it's important to talk about. It really is, which is why we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your perspective for sure, man.
Well, thank you guys so much for helping these folks, mostly women, you know, have a voice. But, you know, I come back anytime. You guys, guys got great energy. You're honorary. I'm putting the stake in the ground today. You're honorary offensive lineman because
there we go.
Because you're smart. You're great. You don't have ego issues. And in the only area you break down in is use the offensive line. We're not very good looking. We're great. You guys are good looking too. So, I mean,
we'll take
it. And Chad, hey, congratulations on being a dad. That's a very important role.
Yeah, it's my first kid. I'm going to think I'm just one and done. I'm just going to do the one. Think I'm good after this. But yeah, I have a son, man. He is awesome. He's going to be big as hell. I'm 6'3", and my girlfriend, his mother is 5'11", almost 6 foot. He already looks like he's about 4 years old. He's only 9 months old. He's going to be big. But yeah, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Changed my life for the better. I never thought I'd be a dad. And it's the greatest thing ever. I can't imagine that I ever thought about not doing this. It's so fantastic, man.
For sure. We've spent a lot of time on this show talking about shots.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I thought it'd be a good appropriate time to talk about another kind of shot. We're going to send you a bottle of whiskey, Ken. This is one of our favorite sponsors, Still Austin, here in Austin. And if you're ever in Austin, Texas, definitely let us know. They take good care of us and take good care of our guests. So I hope you like bourbon or whiskey because we're going to send a bottle of this in the mail. Just to say thanks for coming on.
I'm going to put that on my shelf because that's a keepsake.
Oh, there you go. That's awesome.
I appreciate it. They got a really cool label here too. This is called the Musician. This is the bottle we're sending you. It's pretty cool artwork. On the front, it's pretty sweet. So appreciate that.
Before we let you go, Tim, Ken, I gotta let you know that they're my uncle coached Tim Mastey, the punter for the Green Bay Packers for a long time. He coached him in high school, and we're trying to get him on the show at some point as well. But again, keeping with the Packers, the legendary Packer players here. I remember Tim played in the Super Bowl. Man, I thought he could have had a claim for. Player of the game. He had an amazing game for a punter, which was crazy. But so
MVP.
So we can get Ken and Tim on here, man. That'd be great.
I like it. For sure.
But Ken, you're such an even keeled, intelligent guy, man. You're so cool. If you're ever in Austin, you gotta hit us up. We can go play some golf or get some dinner or something like that. That'd be great.
Absolutely. We'll do.
For sure.
Thank you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Ken. So we really appreciate you coming on the show. All right, that was a great interview with Ken Rutgers, former Green Bay Packer. So much awesome information in there. That dude is such a cool guy, man. He is like, he's a renaissance man. First of all, it's one of the first guys I've ever met that played in the NFL for as long as he did and then has amassed all these degrees. And he's such a level-headed guy, even keeled, easy to talk to, fun to talk to. Awesome, awesome interview. One of my favorite interviews, if not my favorite interview that we've done on the podcast so far.
Yeah, man. There's so much there with this guy. He also wrote a book about parenting. We didn't even touch on that because he's done so much after he retired that we couldn't fit it all into one show. And so I feel like we could have talked to this guy for literally hours. Great conversation. Super insightful. Love his stories man.
One thing that we didn't mention also, man, is the guy looks amazing. He's 58 years old. He looks amazing, dude. If I look that good at 48, I'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? Shit. Guy, he looks great because you can tell why. He's so fun-loving. He seems like he's probably always in a good mood and everything like that. Just a really awesome guy. Renaissance man. Yeah, we didn't even get into some of the topics that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Parenting and stuff. That's a big topic right now.
His energy was great. It was a delight to have him on the show. And hopefully a future guest in the future will bring him back on.
Yeah, talk some Packers.
Could have kept going. Yeah,
could have gone for a long, long time. That could have been easily a two-hour interview, three-hour interview, man.
I liked how he put us on the spot, too.
Yeah.
And asked us some questions.
Yeah, because we're always asking questions. It's nice to get the tables turned and have someone ask us our opinion. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's for great. Sure. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please make sure that you thumbs up us if you happen to be watching on YouTube. If you happen to be listening on iTunes, give us a review there. Tell your friends about the show. You know, join us on Instagram, Twitter, etc. And check out Hot Pie Media's other podcasts. They've got some really good ones as well.
Yeah, make sure you go to hotpiemedia.com. You can find all of our past episodes along with a bunch of other awesome podcasts that's produced by the same network, Hot Pie Media. They treat us very well here. And they've got some great shows out there. We're not the only one. There's a lot of other good shows out there as well. But before we go, let's tell the people about Odd Shark. Odd Shark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Are you looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Odd Shark has that too, and it's fake. In-depth, expert analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. Whether you want to check out tonight's football odds, this week's hockey or basketball trends, or anything in between, head on over to Odd Shark and start thinking like a shark today. That's oddshark.com. Love that site. I get lost in that sometimes, man. I'll spend a couple hours on there just looking at futures, reading the articles, all that stuff. They've got an awesome staff. The people that got writing those articles are amazing, very knowledgeable. So I couldn't encourage you more to go and check that out. Especially anytime before you place a bet, you got to go to Odd Shark and make sure you're getting the best number.
Yeah, it's silly. You're silly not to. They're doing the heavy lifting for you. So you might as well, before you make that bet, just see what other people are thinking.
Exactly, brother. Well, we appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you guys watching. Please give us a thumbs up, review, tell your friends. We'll be back next week with another awesome guest. For Tony, I'm Chad. We'll see you guys next week. Peace out.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home on the web at hotpiemedia.com, the Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.